At Palm Tree, we're not just about numbers and strategies and M&A advisory. We're also about culture, and we're proud of ours, built on collaboration, development, and community. One of our cornerstone core values, a value that speaks to the type of environment fostered here at Palm Tree, is stay frosty. Stay frosty means not being afraid of rolling up your sleeves to do the hard work. It means taking care of yourself so you can show up when it really matters. It means having ice in your veins when the pressure is on, and also knowing how to let down your hair and have some fun. If you picture yourself as a stay frosty type of person, and you are seeking more than just a job, but a place where you can truly grow your career and your M&A skill set, reach out and inquire about opportunities at Palm Tree. There is a link in this episode's show notes where you can learn more and apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Strategy Simplified. Really excited to feature Ryan Boutwell. Ryan is incoming at MBB, a fantastic consultant. Today's episode, he walks through a specific case twice. Why twice? I know you're wondering. Well, the first time, he runs through the case as a candidate. Just typical how you'd run through it as a candidate. The second time through, he gives himself feedback based on key scoring criteria and walks through his rationale for each answer. This will be helpful if you're preparing for case interviews because you get to see what a good case performance looks like, how to use scoring criteria to self-assess your own casing performance, and what the interviewer is seeing and thinking as they walk you through a case. It's a valuable resource. You can download Ryan's notes as a free resource at the link in this episode's show notes. In addition, in the show notes, you'll find the video version of these walkthroughs linked as well. And finally, before we dive into the episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to help more listeners such as yourself find Strategy Simplified. Thank you in advance. All right, let's get into this episode.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. So we're going to walk through alcohol distribution, which is a profitability scenarios case. I wanted to walk you through a little bit of what we're actually going to do here today whenever we walk through this case, because it's going to be a little unique of a platform or the way that we're delivering it. So in part one, I'm going to walk through what a live case would look like. So importantly, as you can tell from the video, I don't have an interviewer. So what we're going to see is that on the slides themselves, I have the information laid out in such a way where it will say the interviewer would say this. And that'll allow me to kind of respond as the interviewee. The goal here is really to show you guys what kind of a great candidate looks like, because we know that it's hard for you to get a feel for actually like what the interviewer is seeing. So after we walk through a case like that, and I'll go through each one of the different kind of pieces of a case, the intro, we'll go into the framework, then we'll move into some of the exhibits, we'll do a creative piece, and then a final recommendation. After we do all that, then we'll go back through the case and we'll talk through each individual piece separately. So what we'll do there is we'll kind of dive into a little bit more detail, and I'll try to explain a little bit of why I'm saying certain things or why I'm doing certain things, and what the interviewer is likely expecting or anticipating out of you as the interviewee, as well as kind of what might happen in an interview setting during each piece. So now let's go ahead and get started. Thanks. So if I understand correctly, we have a U.S. client, an alcohol distributor, and they're looking to kind of restructure their distribution strategy overall. We've been brought in to help them understand kind of the best way to work through this situation. Do I have that correct? Perfect. So I think in this situation, I'd like to better understand the goal here at the end of the day. So obviously they have a certain number of distribution centers today, and we're going to look to potentially change that up in some way. Do we have a goal in mind, such as lowering costs, increasing our overall capacity, maybe shifting our capacity? Anything in particular that you think we should be aware of today? Great. And the second question that I have is, do we know how many distribution centers they have today and what their existing capacity is with those distribution centers? Okay, perfect. If you don't mind, I'll just take a couple of moments here to gather my thoughts. Thanks. Okay, great. So I'm thinking about this potential change from four different lenses. First, I'd like to understand some of the financial implications. Next, I'd like to look at some of our existing operations and better understand that before we make a formal recommendation. I'd like to better understand and explore further the market that we operate in. And last, I'd like to look at some potential risks that I think that we should address head on at the very beginning so that we can get through this in a seamless fashion. From a financial perspective, I'd like to start by understanding kind of the different options that we might have. So, for example, we know that we have 50 centers today with a total capacity of 1.25 billion total bottles. So, if we go to shut down a facility, what's the cost? What are the variable costs and the fixed costs, as well as any of the shutdown costs associated with that, whether it's demolition costs or maybe it's just severance costs, if we have to consider that, any of the shutdown costs associated with that as well. Next, from an operational standpoint, I'd like to understand what our current demand is. Our capacity is 1.25 billion. That's fantastic. But what is our current demand? We need to understand that so that we can make sure that we can still service our customers in the event that we decide to shut down a particular plant. Next, I'd like to understand the different capacity limits within each one of the facilities. So, if we have 1.25 billion capacity today and our existing demand is half of that, I don't want to shut down more than half of our existing capacity, right? Next, moving on to the market, what's the growth expectations of our company? So, it's important to understand the capacity constraints overall and the demand today, but we also need to make sure that we're going to be able to service our customers going into the future. Our company is doing great. We're going to continue to grow, but we need to make sure that we can maintain that growth. Is there a regionality component to this market that we need to be aware of? Certain bottling facilities that need to be placed out on the West Coast or out on the East Coast because they serve certain markets, or product preferences that we need to be aware of? If there's a single facility somewhere that only bottles a certain type of alcohol that is not bottled anywhere else, well, that may not be a good candidate for being shut down because that market still needs to be served. And last, on the risk side, I think that we need to better understand how making some of these changes will impact our company potentially. So, some things that come to mind for me is, by shutting down a facility, are we going to interrupt operations in a way that will hamstring us kind of in the short term and potentially in the long term? We need to be cognizant of that. How is morale going to be perceived within the organization if we shut down a plant? And last, and I also think is very important as well, is PR. As a relatively large company, we always need to be making sure that we're paying attention to public perception. It's certainly not the only thing we need to pay attention to, but it's certainly a consideration that I'd like to make sure that we take that we're fully aware of as we start making decisions here. But I think where I would like to start is I would like to better understand some of the financial implications of each one of these facilities. That would be potential shutdown costs, variable costs, and fixed costs of each one. And then understanding some of the demand characteristics. So, what's our current demand today, as well as some of the growth characteristics of that demand? And if we have the capacity of each facility to go along with the financials, that would be helpful as well in letting us determine which ones are potential good candidates for changes. Is that something that we have today? Excellent. So, what I see here is we have demand expectations for the past 6 years. So, that's going to be our actual data from 2018 through 2023 in millions of bottles, capping out at 800 million. And then 24 through 28 are expected changes in demand. So, it looks like we cap out at 1 billion total bottles of demand, which is great because we know that our existing capacity is 1.25 billion. And so, what this tells me immediately is that we need to maintain a minimum of 1 billion bottles of total capacity. So, the max that we can actually take out of the system is going to be 250 million total bottles. Great. And what we have here is we have four different scenarios. I'm going to assume that those are essentially different plants that we can look at as potential restructuring opportunities. And we've got the number of bottles that each one produces in millions, closing costs and the variable and the fixed costs. Okay, that's great. So what I can do with this is I can first start by removing scenario four. So what we talked about on the last exhibit is that we have a total capacity today of 1.25 billion, and we have a need of 1 billion going out to 2028. So the max that we would be even willing to consider shutting down would be 250 million total bottles. Since scenario four is more than that, I want to go ahead and remove that one from the mix altogether. Is that okay with you? Great. So what I'd like to do next is I'd like to start by calculating kind of a total annual cost of what we could avoid if we shut down each one of these facilities. And I want to compare that to the shutdown costs in total. And I want to use that to calculate sort of a payback period. And what I mean by that is it's essentially, if we use scenario one as an example, what I mean by that is essentially that it's going to cost us $600 million to close the first plant, and there's a certain number of costs that we're going to avoid. So I can look at this one and already see that it's going to be $200 million in variable costs, $100 million in annual costs, in fixed costs, and that would result in a total annual savings of $300 million. So it's going to take us essentially 2 years to pay back that first facility's shutdown cost. And it would be below our existing threshold of 250 million. I'd like to do that for the remaining two facilities. Does that sound like the best path forward here for you? Great. So I'll move over to scenario two, which is plant two. And I'll start by calculating the variable cost. So we've got $1.50 per unit, and we've got 250 million units. So $1.50 times 250. Well, $1.50 times 200 would give us 300. And then half of the 250 would give us, so we've got a total of 375. We've got a total of $375 million of total variable costs. And then on the fixed cost side, we see 125 for a total of $500 million in annual cost avoidance if we shut down this facility. Comparing that to our $800 million shutdown cost, it looks like that's actually going to be less than 2 years. That works itself out to somewhere in the ballpark of about 1.7 to 1.8 years, I think, roughly. But we know that it's less than 2 years, which tells us that that would presumably be a slightly better option for us than scenario one. And I'll move over to scenario three now to take a look at that one. So we have $2 per unit of variable cost and 200 million total units. So that's $400 million of total variable costs. And on the fixed cost side, we have $100 million. So that's $500 million of total avoidable costs if we shut down this facility. And as we can see, the closing is going to be $1 billion. So that one is actually also going to produce a two-year payback. So what we know now from looking at this exhibit is that scenario four doesn't work for us because it's too big of a capacity for us to shut down based on our existing needs. Scenario one and scenario three are going to have the longest payback period of 2 years of the remaining three facilities. In scenario two, we'll avoid $500 million in total costs, and it'll take $800 million to shut down the facility. So we would expect to pay back our existing kind of investment in the shutdown in less than 2 years. So based on kind of the financial components alone, I think that scenario two or facility number two is likely the best path forward for us. The next thing that I'd like to consider is I would like to look at some of the risks associated with shutting this down as well before we can kind of fine tune and lock in that recommendation for our client.
Are you considering a consulting role, but you're not sure if you have the right experience? Then join Strategy Sprint for a 1 week virtual consulting project that will help you add amazing US-based work experience to your resume. And until April 26th, you'll get $200 off the next Strategy Sprint project for an early bird discount. See the link in the show notes to get the discount and to join Strategy Sprint. Just a few more quick details about the project. In Strategy Sprint, you're staffed in a team of six led by a former McKinsey Bain or BCG consultant, a and your job is to answer a strategic or growth question for a real client. In the project, you'll not only confirm if consulting is right for you, you'll gain incredible US work experience for your resume. And as a bonus, we'll even help you add the experience to your resume. Again, link in the show notes to learn more and to sign up for Strategy Sprint.
Great. So thinking about some of the key risks associated with shutting down the second facility in our list there, I'd like to look at the capacity. I'd like to look at the variable costs associated with it. And as I mentioned earlier in my framework, I'd also like to give some consideration to the morale of the company and how that might be impacted here. So as we think about the capacity, you know, we mentioned that $250 million was the total amount that we could shut down, the max. And that's exactly what this facility has. So if we outstrip our projections, we're not going to have enough capacity to serve them. As it stands today, we're expecting to see 1 billion total bottles in demand by 2028. But if we do better than that, then we're going to have to look at expanding somehow to meet that demand. So I'd just like to keep that in mind as we move forward. The variable cost associated with facility two is also the lowest of the three. So typically the way that I think about this is as we grow as a company, the lower the variable cost, the better, because that essentially means that you're making more margin per product that will help you kind of pay off those fixed costs. So of the three that we looked at, one, two, and three from the second exhibit, scenario two actually had the lowest variable cost. So we just need to make sure we keep that in mind, that we are potentially giving up some upside in the long term to make sure that we shut this down in the short term. And that's a key consideration here today. Last is the morale. If we decide to shut down the second facility, you know, what happens to morale within the company? Is this going to be a culture killer? Is this going to spread rumors throughout the organization and people getting nervous about potentially other facilities being shut down? You know, I think we just need to make sure that we keep that in mind as we move forward here. Yeah, so I'd like to start by recommending that we decide to move forward with shutting down scenario two. We came in today hoping to help restructure some of the manufacturing and bottling facility footprints of our client, with the key goal being to reduce costs while maintaining an appropriate amount of capacity to service our existing company demand. We saw that the quickest payback or the fastest kind of cost avoidance strategy that we could come up with was a little bit under 2 years in the second scenario or the second facility. And this also allows us to maintain our capacity to meet the various demand projections that we've put together. One major risk that I see associated with this is that we're very close to the projected capacity. So while I'd like to think that all projections are great and that they're very well done, I would also like to assume that our client could outstrip these projections and potentially do even better than they've already done. And so as the next step, what I'd like to do is I would like to take a look at what it might cost to expand in the future one or two of these facilities, because I'd like to hope that our client would actually outstrip their demand projections and need more than a billion bottles in 2028. And if that becomes the case, what will they need to do? And I'd like to be ready to help them out to do that. All right. So that's the end of part one, which is the case scenario walkthrough itself. So what we're going to do now is we're going to walk through each of the individual pieces, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit more detail. And I'm just going to try to explain some of the reasons for why I did certain things or what I was thinking when I did certain things, and try to also explain a little bit about, you know, what might the interviewer be thinking in this particular situation or that one. Then we'll end it up with, and then we'll follow it, finish up today with some feedback. So I won't worry about reading the introduction to you, but really what you're going to see in these cases, the interviewer is going to present the case. Sometimes they will actually read it to you. Other times they will just put it on your screen and in sort of a sharing mode like this, or in person, they'll just hand you the case if you're interviewing in person. And sometimes it'll be a mixture of both. They'll give you a copy and then maybe they'll read it to you. But really the idea here is you're starting with the introduction and you're going to move to a framework shortly thereafter. That in-between segment is an opportunity for you to ask clarifying questions. So your clarifying questions need to inform your thinking for how you are going to craft your framework in kind of that next step of the case. So here you heard me ask about the goal and the existing manufacturing facilities. How many do we currently have? So some other examples of good clarifying questions are there on the screen for your review. But really, it's kind of up to you where you want to go with the clarifying questions. A good rule of thumb is unless the goal is explicitly laid out in the prompt, I always ask for the goal. You know, I want to know why I'm here today, what we're trying to accomplish, and you know, what constitutes success. And I think importantly, whenever you're asking clarifying questions, you need to also remember that if you ask for the goal, it's not okay, or it's kind of not preferred to say, what is our goal today? You need to say something along the lines of, what is our goal today? Here are some things that I would assume might make sense based on what I know. Do any of those sound right? You heard me in the case previously say, you know, do we want to think about this from a cost avoidance perspective? Do we need to be cognizant of existing demand? You know, what are some things you want to show the interviewer that you're thinking about this and working through it with them, as opposed to just asking for handouts of information? The next thing that I asked is about how many facilities and what our existing capacity was. The reason that I wanted to know about this is because I was immediately thinking, okay, if we have, you know, I'll use our existing example. If we have 1.25 billion total bottles of capacity, but we need 1.5 billion, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would we shut down a facility? There's got to be another reason, right? If we decide to make that move. Similarly, if we have 1.25, but we only need a billion, well, okay, now we have 250 million to work with. And that's kind of the math that I was hoping to get at in my head as I was kind of asking those questions. I've listed out a couple others here that would also make sense, but just know that the interviewer is very rarely going to kind of direct you on clarifying questions. A lot of times they're just going to kind of make a note of, okay, you know, he didn't ask about goal. You know, I hope he guesses correctly. That's kind of an indication that you're off to not the best start. Or, you know, she didn't ask anything about capacity. Well, you know, I hope that kind of comes up naturally throughout the case. And again, just kind of an indication of where you're going and how you're starting off. Next, I moved into the framework. So two things here. Importantly, you never want to spend too much time on the framework. So you definitely want to make sure that this takes less than 2 minutes. I think personally, a rule of thumb that I always had is aim for a minute 30. If you go over a minute 30, a little bit to 140, 145, that's fine. But you absolutely want to keep this under 2 minutes. And you can see on the screen, this is the framework that I use. So financials, that's obvious here. You know, he told us that our goal was what it was. And we were trying to minimize costs. So you know that financials is going to be kind of the key area that you want to go. Operations, you know, we're talking about facilities that make alcoholic beverages, that bottle alcoholic beverages. So there's an operational component to this. We're talking about shutting down a facility potentially. There's kind of indicators all throughout the case prompt here that there's kind of an operational or a logistics bent to this case. So operations was kind of a key next step for me to want to explore further. Next, market. So I think for me, what I was thinking of when I said market was really, when I think about the market for bottled beer or bottled alcoholic beverages, West Coast drinkers might like things that are different than East Coast drinkers, which might like things that are different from Midwest drinkers, which might like things that are different from the Southeastern drinkers, right? So I was thinking there's got to be there may be a regional component to this. There may be kind of growth in different areas. So just because we have 1.25 billion of total capacity doesn't mean that it's all situated perfectly, right? If our Northeastern capacity is only 300 million, but we need 500 million, well, we probably don't want to shut down a facility there, right? Similarly, if we've got 300 million of total capacity on the West Coast, but we only need 100 million, well, that's a prime candidate for potentially somewhere that we could restructure some of that cost out. So I was really just trying to think, you know, it's more about right size. It's not necessarily only about right sizing your footprint and getting to the right number, but it's also making sure that you're strategically positioned in the right places. And last, with any sort of kind of restructuring or M&A or big, massive kind of entry into new market, there's always this opportunity for risky situations. So facilities are getting shut down. We're shifting production around the country. There's this is ripe for operational kind of interruptions, right? And things that could kind of domino throughout the business. Similarly, if we start closing down a facility, there's human beings that work there, right? What happens to the morale of the company if we end up having to lay some people off? Nobody likes to talk about it. It's certainly something that we hope doesn't happen, but it's certainly something that we need to consider here. And then similarly, with any kind of big, massive shifts like this, you've always got to be thinking about, you know, what is the Wall Street Journal going to write about this? So I think it, most importantly, too, about the end of my framework is I want to make an ask to the interviewer. So one of the things that I see a lot from candidates whenever I'm working with them and going through a case process with them is they'll lay out an awesome framework and then they just stop and they look at it. And it gets kind of awkward. There's this dense moment in the middle where nobody's really saying anything. And I just think, okay, so what next? You know, don't even give your interviewer the chance to do that. Lay out your framework, be concise. And then as soon as you finish, say, I would like to start here. Do you have this? Sometimes they will respond and say, no, we don't. Is there anywhere else you would like to start? And then just move to that next bucket. So you'll see that I asked for the financial information and I asked for operational information. I think that's one way to go about it. You can certainly just start with the financial. And what an interviewer may have said is, no, we don't have any financial information. Where else would you like to look? And you immediately go to operations. Great. If we don't have any financial information, do we have anything on our operational footprint? I'd like to understand our current customer demand and what the breakdown is of our capacity across our various facilities. Is that something that we have today? Just move right down the buckets. But most also importantly, along with that, is make sure that whatever you're asking for is your furthest left bucket. So what I want to do is I started by saying I want to look at financials, operations, market, and risk. So I need to ask for financials because I said that first. That shows the interviewer that that's kind of my highest priority. So then if I start at financial and then ask for market information, it's a little bit awkward. So start at financial, ask for financial. If the interviewer responds and says, no, that's not what we have, okay, move right over to the operations bucket. If they still respond and say, no, that's not what we have, move over to the market bucket. Just continue to move down. And as you work with the interviewer, you'll get to the right place and you'll move on and you'll be able to look at some of the exhibits that are to come. So then we moved on to exhibit one here. So what I did is I started out by just clearing the exhibit, telling the interviewer what I see. This is your opportunity to ask questions. You can make some key insights. What I said is, I see we've got historical data and I see we've got projection data. Our demand expectations in the furthest out projection year is 1 billion bottles. Boom. Okay. That is my floor. If I recommend that we take out any bottles from your capacity, that's fine, but I cannot go below 1 billion because then you're not going to have the amount of capacity you need to service your customers. So that was my key insight to the interview. And then the next exhibit came up and I said, okay, great. So we've got units and we've got four different facilities options that we could potentially close or change in some way, shape, or form. So you'll notice that what I did here is I started by telling the interviewer again what I see on the table. And then I said, you know what? Scenario four is impossible. We have 1.25 billion of total capacity today. We need 1 billion. So the most that we can take out of the system is 250 million. Scenario four suggests that we're going to take out 350 million. I'd like to just get rid of that altogether. That's kind of a good trick to kind of show the interviewer that you are moving from a good to a great candidate, because that does a few things, right? First, it shows that you have prioritized the goal and you understand the different parameters that with which you have to stay in to reach that goal. And the other thing is that you're prioritizing. When you move into management consulting, you're going to be strapped for time. There's always going to be more work than there is time to actually do that work. We all know this, right? So if you can show the interviewer, like, look, I'm not even going to waste my time doing the math on scenario four because it doesn't matter. We're not taking that one out. So I'm not going to waste your time. I'm not going to waste my time. We're going to spend all of our time on the first three because those are the only possible options here today. Now, one thing that I will point out is I think that it's always best to just ask your interviewer if that's okay. Some interviewers will say, no, let's keep that one in. Go ahead. I appreciate where you're going with that. And I see what you wanted to do there, but let's keep that one in for today. And sometimes that's because you're going to do the math, and you're going to see some things that maybe are so good or so helpful to the goal or something that they're willing to overlook something like what I mentioned. And there's a million different examples for why they might want to keep it in. Sometimes they'll just want you to do the math and show that you can, you've got the quantitative chops to do it. I think it's always just a good practice to just ask your interviewer, do you mind if I take this one in? So then we moved on to the math, and I'll let you look at the math here for a minute, but this is essentially the math that we wanted to do. And you'll notice that when I was working through the math, I was doing everything I could to keep my interviewer engaged. So I was saying things like, we have 100 million units in scenario one, variable cost per unit of two, 100 times two, that's $200 million of total variable cost. Add that to the fixed cost. Now we've got $300 million worth of total annual cost that we're going to avoid if we shut this down. And so I kind of walked my interviewer using words through the equation that I wanted to do. And then I said, next, what I would like to do is compare this to the closing cost to show how quickly we'll pay back that investment of closing down this facility. As you can see in scenario one, it's going to take us 2 years. Does that sound like the right math to you or the best next step forward? I'd like to take that and do that for scenario two and three and compare them to see kind of where they fall. In theory, the interviewer would either say, no, that doesn't sound right. Maybe let's look at this a different way. Or they'll say, yeah, that sounds great. Let's go ahead. But even more so than just getting that interviewer buy-in, I think you also get the opportunity then to identify missing information. So for example, if we didn't have the closing costs there, but we just had the annual costs of each one of these facilities, you can see that scenario one is the lowest and two, three, and four are all the exact same. So I might say something like, if we didn't have the closing costs, but I outlined that formula, I might say, you know, this would be a little bit more helpful if we had the amount of cost that it's going to take to actually close down this facility, because then we can compare it on a payback basis. And that would be a little bit easier for us from an apples to apples perspective for us to look at this and determine which one is really kind of the best path forward. Is that something we have? So by speaking the actual equation out loud to the interviewer, you can start to identify pieces of information that don't exist that you might need to ask for. And that's perfectly okay. You'll certainly have cases that are like that. And I think that by laying it out simply for the interviewer like that, it gives you an opportunity to identify those things. Because if you ask in the middle of your math, it's not bad, but it can be a little awkward, and it's certainly a little bit more challenging than getting that information right out of the gates. So I think that that's a really helpful way to kind of pull some of that missing information out to the extent that it's necessary. And I'll move over here to show you some of the sample answers that we put together. So I'll leave the screen up for about 30 seconds and let you read through this a little bit. Okay, hopefully you had a chance to read through that. If not, take a screenshot and we'll go ahead and move on. Okay, and this is when we're starting to move into the creative section of the case. So as you can see on the screen there, you know, the interviewer will prompt you and you'll make a recommendation on how to move forward. And then you'll kind of talk about something else that you want to look at. In this case, it was risks. So then we moved over to risks, and this is the way that I organized it. So capacity was an easy one, right? You know, we're right at that 1 billion total bottles of capacity available, and that's exactly in line with our demand. Everybody wants to assume that they're going to do a little bit better than their projections, right? So I hope our client does better than their projections, but what does that mean from a capacity standpoint? Variable cost. You know, this is a costing problem, right? So, you know, we got to think about variable cost because we're shutting down the lowest variable cost one, facility. And I'll come back to that as well, because I threw something in there that I think is kind of another example of how you can separate from a good to a great candidate. And lastly, as we mentioned earlier, you know, morale and culture. So If you're shutting down a facility, that potentially means that you're going to be firing people, right? So we got to talk about morale. We got to talk about culture. What does that mean in this context for this company? We just need to make sure that we kind of keep hammering that home. So going back to the variable cost one, you'll notice that when I talked about this, I said, you know, in theory, whenever we have a very low variable cost and a similar selling point, that's good because that gives us more margin to use to pay back the fixed cost associated with whatever it is that we're producing. So in this particular scenario, we were recommending closing the lowest variable cost facility of the bunch that was available. So why does that take me from a good to a great candidate? It shows business acumen. So sometimes the numbers will say one thing whenever you look at it a certain way, but they can suggest other things in a different way. And this is a prime example. So if we go to our client and we say, hey, we recommend that you close facility number two for XYZ reasons, the payback and all the other stuff that we calculated. And they say, oh yeah, that's our lowest variable cost producing facility in the entire network. We're not shutting that one down. Well, you need to understand why, right? And the reason that they're saying that, presumably based on that kind of little bit of information, is because they can scale that facility and it's very profitable to the organization. So just understanding some of those nuances is just an opportunity for you to show your interviewer like, hey, I know a little bit about business. I understand the numbers and I can kind of understand and read through some of the context to understand a little bit more about what this is saying. So that's an excellent way, I think, to take yourself from a good candidate all the way up to a great candidate. Show off your business acumen. Show them that you know what you're talking about. Here we moved over into the recommendation. And I'll leave this up while I'm talking here. But essentially what I did is I first started with the recommendation. I recommend that we go with scenario two and we close that facility right out of the gates. So recommend first. You can go into some of the supporting context of why you're here and what your goal was as you're presenting your data. So we moved into, you know, you brought us into data to help you look at the facility's restructuring. Here's the data that we crunched. Here's some of the outputs that we had. And then you want to move directly into a risk. One risk that I see is the capacity. We're going to be taking this down from 1.25 billion down to 1 billion. And we know that that is exactly what our projected capacity is in the next 5 years. In the event that your company does too good and you need more capacity, I'd like to understand what that means for you. Because if it's going to cost a ton of money to address additional capacity in the future, we might need to rethink how much capacity we're willing to take out of the system today. So that is something that I'd like to get started on. I can get started on it immediately. So you can see what I'm doing is I'm recommending a clear action that we do moving forward. And then I'm talking about the supporting data for why I think we should do that and how that aligns with the goals that we've established for the day. I'm pointing out that there are risks associated with this potential move, and I'm pointing out what those are. And my next step is something that I can do to mitigate that risk. So it's recommendation, supporting data, risk, and next step. And just remember that that next step is strongest when it is a mitigating action against that risk that we laid out originally. So now let's take a look here and show some of the feedback framework that we'll look at. So as you can see, we have six areas of feedback. So prompt recap, clarifying questions, case structure, exhibits and analysis, brainstorming, and final recommendation. I tried to walk through all of these and show you what a four candidate would look like or a rating of four in all of these. I'll let you read through some of these on your own and kind of identify the areas that you need to work on and think about the way that how you have done in your casing journey in each one of these. But essentially what you're trying to do is in the prompt recap, you just want to make sure that you've got everything that you were supposed to get out of the recap and that you kind of regurgitate that back to the interviewer in a cohesive, quick way, and it takes less than a minute. Clarifying questions, as I mentioned, we're gathering information so that we can establish a framework, right? This is kind of the bridge between our prompt and our actual framework itself. So gather the key elements of the problem. Limit the scope of the case. So we could take cases in a million different directions, but when we start getting our goal and we start getting a little bit of information about the business, Now we start to narrow that funnel on the areas that we're going to look at. Demonstrate business acumen. That's obviously always going to help you kind of go from that good to great candidate status, as we just talked about. And then similar to kind of what I mentioned earlier, you want to be quick with this, so less than 2 minutes talking time. Case structure. So we all know our favorite term, MEC, right? You want to make sure that it's MEC. You want to always talk about your four key categories and then your three bullet points after that. So you saw I said financials, operations, market risks. And then I said, here's what I want to talk about in financials. Here's what I want to talk about in operations. Here's market, here's risk, in that order. And less than 2 minutes to write, less than 2 minutes to go through it. Exhibits analysis. Similar thing. Always make sure that you're grabbing those level three insights. So what does it tell us? What can we glean from this? And then that next question, do you have this? Do you have this? Kind of keep driving the case forward. So you'll notice that whenever I finished doing my analysis in the second exhibit, I started out by telling them what was on each exhibit. I drew a conclusion. And then I said, in order to keep going, I need this data. So that's that level three insight. I'd like to look at this piece of data to move forward to answer these questions for our client. Kind of keep digging and going a little bit further. And we've got some guidance here on takes less than 5 minutes to complete. I think that's a perfect goal for you to aim for. Some analysis will be a little quicker. Some may be a little bit shorter. But if you can get these things done in about a 5 minute average, I think you're doing great. Brainstorming, same thing. This is another opportunity for you to show that you have a MISI structure, that you have a very structured and linear approach to the problem solving methods. And on this one, because it's a little bit more ad hoc versus the framework that is very, very structured and kind of heads down time, we talk about three categories, and you kind of want to have two ideas within each category. So what I talked about today was around the capacity, the costing aspect that we discussed in a little bit more detail, and then morale. So you want to make sure that you just have those buckets laid out. And similar thing, when you present this to your interviewer, start at the top. I want to talk about capacity constraints. I want to talk about the costing, and I want to talk about morale, and then go into the details. And then last but not least is our final recommendation. You know, concise, deliver, answer first, support by the evidence in your case analysis, talk about a risk, and then a next step that will mitigate that risk. So this needs to be snappy, quick, less than a minute and a half, and get out of there. And the last thing that we have over here is body language, poise, confidence. So this is an interesting one, especially for those of you that may go through interviews over Zoom. That's what I did. You'll notice that I use my hands a lot whenever I'm talking. Really what I'm trying to do is I'm trying my best to draw the interviewer in. You got to take a step back and think about it from their perspective. If you're interviewing with a McKinsey, for example, and you're going through a super day, well, it's very likely that they have 7, 8, maybe 10 other interviews that day. They're probably swamped at work. They don't necessarily want to be there. I think they all want to talk to us, but I think that they recognize that this is a tough day. It's exhausting for them. So the more kind of inviting that you can be, the friendlier, the more you can kind of draw your interviewer into the case process with you by asking them questions, keeping them engaged in your math, walking them through your structure, going into a little bit more detail with your business acumen. Get creative, make it fun, engaging, show confidence and poise, and use your body language to kind of invite the interviewer in. That goes a long way from taking you up from a good candidate all the way up to a great candidate. So we talked about a lot there, and I'm going to stop for a second and just say we made it. We got through the case. That was a lot of fun. We're going to put some show notes below as well that'll kind of highlight the different pieces that we were looking at throughout the case. So if there's one particular area that you want to go back to or spend a little bit more time watching, or maybe dig into the PowerPoint in a little bit different way, absolutely go down to the show notes and click on that and have more information for you so that you can kind of mix and match and go to different areas of that. I hope you all found this enjoyable, and I hope you all found it useful, and I'll see you next time.
If you're looking for a little bit of expert help with your case interview preparation, look no further than our Black Belt program. This is a personalized case prep program that combines one-on-one coaching with a former McKinsey Banner BCG consultant alongside an expert resume edit, access to our amazing consulting community, and much more. Learn more, link in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in to Strategy Simplified. We'll catch you on another episode soon.